Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, October 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Since March, the terms coronavirus and COVID-19 have been seared into our consciousness. COVID-19 has ebbed and flowed across the world and flowed and ebbed again, presenting challenges across society, every bit of it. And the ones who have seen the most action, if you will, have been those on the front line, the medical professionals working with local, state, and federal governments, striking the balance between keeping economies alive and keeping people alive. And today we have a special guest, Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, who will be on the line to answer your questions, hear your comments about the COVID response. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, right after the news. Hi again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing COVID-19 today with Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. Dr. Whalen is the commissioner of the Albany County Department of Health. She received her Bachelor of Science in Psychology from Fairfield University, her medical degree from the National University of Ireland, Galway, and completed a master's in public health at SUNY Albany School of Public Health. She earned a dual medical board certification in internal medicine, general public health, and preventive medicine, and has worked for over 15 years in the field of public health and population medicine. Dr. Whalen has worked on initiatives involving maternal care, communicable disease control, public health preparedness, and environmental health. If you have a question for Dr. Elizabeth Whalen today, give us a call and do it early. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, and we'll try to get to as many of those as possible as we roll. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Ray. I appreciate it.
I assume that you might have better things to do, but thanks for taking an hour with us. How has, when you took this job as county health commissioner, did you ever imagine a situation like this?
Well, interestingly, yes. I had worked here previously in the early 2000s, and, you know, from a public health perspective, we have always had a significant chunk of the work that we do to try to plan for a pandemic. We have a division of public health and emergency preparedness, and we have been conducting drills and plans for years for this scenario. But having said that, it's still in real time, and as it evolves, there's always unexpected consequences and circumstances. So there's a lot that I wouldn't have predicted and a lot that I may have.
That's interesting that you have drilled this, you have planned for this. What is different than what you planned for?
So, you know, the planning really is about what to do when we look at a large-scale communicable disease outbreak. And there are many different scenarios that may arise. In some of these scenarios, you can give people medication, for example, or vaccination. So, for example, smallpox was something that was considered when we were concerned about bioterrorist attacks around after 9/11. We have dealt with large-scale communicable disease outbreaks like pertussis throughout the years, where you can give people medication and slow the stem of communicability. And we also dealt with things like SARS and with H1N1. With coronavirus, you know, the situation is that this is a novel virus, meaning that we haven't seen this before, and that there is no immunity among the general public for this virus. The concerns that make this such a difficult thing to track is that people can spread the disease when they're asymptomatic. They can have a case when they're asymptomatic. And, you know, that makes it a lot more difficult to control. So that was the clinical picture of how this has evolved is something we're still learning day to day. And it's not really like anything else we had previously modeled for.
We are joined today by Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. Our number, if you have a question for Dr. Whalen, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, you mentioned H1N1, and that was brought up in the debate among all the screaming the last week. Explain to me what really is the difference? Now, there were a sizable number of cases when H1N1 hit, but nothing like this. Explain to me the major differences between this coronavirus, and we've seen coronaviruses before, and the H1N1.
So, you know, with the flu virus is something that we're used to dealing with, and it is a virus that can still be unpredictable because the flu virus is, by its nature, very capable of changing and mutating and does so on a yearly basis. And this is why we need a flu shot on a yearly basis. But every once in a while, we see a major shift in a flu virus, which is a novel strain and can cause a more severe disease than we usually see. So with H1N1, that was a scenario where there was a big change in the virus, and so there was much less immunity in the public. And the concern was around disease severity and people getting sicker than they would in a normal course of a flu season. With coronavirus, again, we have seen there are coronaviruses that cause the common cold, but this is very different. And what we started to see when we saw this early evolution in Wuhan and other parts of China was, a real severe clinical picture and high rates of hospitalization, illness, and death. And that is above and beyond anything we've seen for flu season in our lifetime and, arguably and since the pandemic of 1918. So that really made public health sit up and say we've got to prepare as well as we can for this so that we don't have our hospitals completely overwhelmed and have, individuals that can't get the medical care that they need.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was really about the novel nature of coronavirus and the severity.
You do press conferences every day and give us the numbers, and Albany County now has 103 active cases, according to what you told us today, after 15 new cases confirmed since yesterday. So that's 941 people under mandatory quarantine, four mm-hmm. residents in the hospital. The five-day average is about 19 in Albany County. Explain to me and the rest of us why the five-day average is important.
So what we really are very invested in doing, particularly at this time of year when we know flu season is upon us, is monitoring trends in the cases that we have and to try to determine whether we are at risk of what we've all been concerned about, a second surge of coronavirus disease in the fall as people start to go inside. So we really can't get a sense on how that's happening from day to day because there's a lot of differences in reporting and, how we collect data in a real-time fashion is always a challenge. So we tend to look at a five-day period to give us an idea of whether we are moving up or down in terms of general number of cases. So that's why that five-day is important.
Now, 103 active cases, that's what's about 0.1% of Albany County population, right?
Well,
something like
it's a lower number than that. But there's still what we're trying to determine is how we can stop clusters of illness from occurring. And a single case, what we do with and what we've always done with reportable communicable diseases is what's called case investigation. So you determine where someone might have been and how they could have contracted the disease, and then you start looking at their contacts and making sure that those people that are close contacts are quarantined for the incubation period of the disease. When we start to see clusters, which means about three cases in a small business or in a school or in another setting, then we really want to make sure that we're taking appropriate steps to advise those that are either in management or, about how to use infection control appropriately and maybe broaden our net of testing so that if there are those that are there that may be asymptomatic, we can identify them as well and stop the spread.
We are joined today by Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. We'll take a break here in a moment. You mentioned colleges, however. We saw SUNY Cortland will be going to distance learning for a pause, as they call it. Now, we watched you work and county leaders work and state leaders and national leaders work all spring, all summer. But locally, it must have been quite a challenge come late August when all the colleges began slowly repopulating. How do you keep a handle on things when you have that influx of population?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And we've been really lucky to have great partnerships with the colleges and university that we have in Albany County. And all of them, we had been in very close contact with throughout the spring and planning for the reintroduction of the student population in the fall. It really is all about education, and it's about planning. So making sure that the universities had appropriate places to put students if they needed to be isolated and quarantined, making sure the reporting process was in place so that we would be able to get the notification of the cases and be able to do the appropriate case investigation and contact tracing. And really, it is also about, you know, making sure that the students themselves are empowered to make the best decisions that they can make. And it's a difficult age population. I know I have two college student children, and, you know, they're not used to, you know, some of the important public health practices like wearing masks and social distancing and frequent hand washing. But, you know, I think for the most part, most of the students want to be able to consider and continue their in-person schooling. So far it's been pretty good in terms of the rates at the colleges, but we watch that on a daily basis.
We're joined today by Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. And Dr. Whalen, we got to take a break here. President Trump last night said, "Don't be afraid of COVID." Are you afraid?
So afraid is not necessarily the word that I would use. I think that, you know, we all have to have a real caution around COVID. We have to have a healthy concern and know how we can protect ourselves. So I disagree with that statement, but I think that there are a lot of people that are in situations where they may be at high risk. And frankly, we can't predict that young and healthy people are going to have a safe course if they do get COVID-19. So I think it really behooves all Americans, and particularly those that are high risk, to have a healthy caution and learn more about how they can protect themselves. And that includes wearing masks and social distancing and avoiding large gatherings and frequent hand hygiene.
Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen joining us for the hour today on Vox Pop. We'll get to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. We are lucky to have Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen today. And the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. We'll take care of an email here. Before we do that, Dr. Whalen, how many hours a day are you working these days?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't even know how I would quantify that. There's in-office hours, and then there's after hours, and there's weekends. I will say that I have really been incredibly impressed with the staff that we have here at the health department. We have really manned a 24/7 operation since February, and the staff are incredibly dedicated in the work that they do in their case investigation and contact tracing. So there's a lot of people that are doing this work to help keep the residents in Albany County safe.
Well, you know, if this ever ends, I hope that you and the gang have one hell of a party, because you deserve it.
All right. Thank you.
This email came in from Josh. Josh says, is the COVID-19 virus weaker now than last March and April? Do viruses in general weaken as they progress? And that is from Josh.
Yeah, there's no evidence really that we're seeing a weakening of the virus, and we are seeing that, you know, the transmission is actually picking up at this time of year, and you know, people need to be on alert. I know many people are fatigued listening to these public health messages on a daily basis, but the virus is still circulating, and we are starting to see a slight uptick in cases. I believe there's a 25% increase in cases in the month of September across the country. So people need to remain vigilant.
Do you think that's related specifically to colleges coming back?
I think that could be a part of it. I don't think that's the entire answer. As we know, in the fall, people start to go inside, and it's easier to catch communicable diseases when you are inside. So that plays into it. Some viruses have a seasonal nature to them. We don't know that yet about COVID, but all these can be factors that could be factoring in.
We're joined today by Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, who is Albany County Health Commissioner. And hold that thought about inside and outside. I want to take that up with you after we take a few calls here. Let's go to David in New Paltz. David.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for a good show.
Thanks.
Hello, Dr. Whalen. I have a question. Evolution, as Darwin has put it, evolution of species, says that viruses have as much to do with the evolution of a species as environment. And my question is, how is this virus affecting our DNA and the species of Homo sapiens?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one there. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, David, I thank you for that that very complicated question. And, you know, my simple answer is going to be right now, we don't know how this is affecting overall evolution. You know, generally when we have large-scale pandemics and viral instances like this across the country, of course, you know, and across the world, which is what a pandemic does, we are concerned about the mortality rate, and we are concerned about how this affects people that live with the complications of COVID. Right now, it's too early to say, but we about the latter. But the former, we know that this has got a higher rate of morbidity than the flu does, and we don't really know what the overall number of people that are going to lose their lives are. From a public health perspective, what we really focus on is just trying to stem that communicability so that we have less people that become ill and less people that die. So that's really the focus of the work that I do on a daily basis.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Earlier you mentioned inside and outside, and people now are starting to migrate inside, and you expect an uptick in infections. Yesterday, Vermont Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine announced Addison County's Champlain Orchard has a COVID-19 outbreak, at least 26 cases. But then the health commissioner also said, you're not at risk if you went apple picking there, bought those apples, et cetera, even though farmers, workers, et cetera, were exposed. So can the virus not live on apples? And even if you are in close quarters with farm workers and everybody else at the orchard, you're going to be fine? Is that an overstatement?
Well, I obviously don't know specifics about this particular outbreak, but there's a lot of considerations that would go into this. So certainly if you're talking about workers that are living in cramped environments that are inside, we know that that's a risk. When you're closer to somebody than 6 feet for more than 10 minutes, you're putting yourself at risk. I don't know whether they have buildings where they are doing sales. It is not completely risk-free to be interacting with people outside either. We do know that. While there's less of a risk of transmission if you're outside because there are breezes flowing around, there's more air circulation, it is not completely without risk. So I don't know to comment on the specifics of why that statement was made, but that's a general understanding.
Now, we've had, during the course of this 6 or 7 months, we have had virologists and epidemiologists on this program, and forgive me for asking you the same question I asked them, but you brought it up, so I'm going to ask. How is it that 10 minutes and 6 feet is the benchmark, and what if I went 9.5 minutes and I was 5.5 feet? I mean, who makes these numbers?
Yeah, so I mean that's a good question too. You know, we really look at what we know about a particular disease, and you know what we know about transmission between individuals. It is not hard and fast, and again, it doesn't mean if you're with someone for less period of time, you have absolutely no risk. But the fact of the matter is we have to kind of quantify these in some way, shape, or form. And I think in this situation, we really look at the lowest possible amount of exposure that somebody can have. I mean, if you're within 6 feet of somebody for 5 minutes, it really isn't a lot of time. So we look at, you know, that to kind of quantify so that we can make the decisions that we need to make around contact tracing.
And you think the science is pretty much on point on this?
So, you know, again, with COVID, we're still learning. We're still learning. I think that, you know, we use what we have done for plans for diseases like influenza and how we define close contact for other communicable diseases to help inform this. But we are learning in real time about the epidemiology of COVID and the behavior of the virus. And as we learn more, these decisions hopefully will inform public health practice.
All right, I'm going to jot that down, and we will talk about the future after we take a few more calls. Dr. Elizabeth Whalen joins us today. Dr. Whalen is Albany County Health Commissioner, and let's go to Evie, or is it Evie, in Gloversville?
Oh, hello?
Hello, is this Evie or Evie?
Wait a second. Hey, Ray?
Yes, hello.
Hello?
Hi, how do
I
see,
wait, I know what I'm doing wrong. Hi, right. Ray.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Ray. It's Evie.
Oh, Evie. Okay, Evie, you're on with Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Dr. Whalen. Thank you for everything you do in Albany County. I'm from Fulton County, and great shows, Ray.
Thank you.
My question is, if my daughter visits from New York City, and she's been, she has the antibodies because she had COVID, so she tested positive for the antibodies. Should she still wear a mask so that, like when she's in New York City and then she comes up and visits us, can she still have it in her mouth, you know, the disease, even though she's already had it and she has the antibodies, and so that when I kiss her, hello, when she comes to visit? Could I still get it from her, even though she's tested negative?
We got you.
Hi, Evie. Those are good questions, too. So, you know, in terms of having antibodies to COVID and having a positive antibody test, what that means is that you have been exposed and developed an antibody response. So usually it means people have had infections in the past. Now, when you have COVID actively, when you're sick, we know that most, you know, we really don't see transmission in people that have COVID beyond 9 days of when they are initially symptomatic or diagnosed. So somebody with COVID antibodies that is beyond that period of their illness should not be able to transmit COVID. Now, there's a caveat to that. We don't know whether someone with COVID antibodies, whether it means that they're immune to getting it again. So theoretically, even if you have antibodies, there's a concern that a small amount of people might be able to be re-exposed and reinfected. So in terms of your daughter's previous, and I didn't ask you about the time period, but if she's antibody positive, I presume it was in the distant past that she was ill. More than a couple of weeks ago, she is not contagious from that particular illness, but that does not mean she could not be re-exposed and reinfected. So, you know, in terms of whether a mask is recommended in the home, you know, a lot of times we, for family situations, we advise people to take into consideration the risk of the individual that you're interacting with, whether, you know, the mask use at home is necessary. But, you know, a lot of people, when they're visiting with their families, like their children in particular, they come and they stay, and you just have to be mindful of whether she has been placed at risk in the time period before she came home that she may be carrying something.
Okay.
Dr. Whalen, she can't be contagious. Even if she has it in her mouth, you can't be contagious?
Well, no. What I won't say she can't be contagious. What I mean is, from an antibody perspective, if she was ill, if she had an illness, for that particular bout of illness she had, she would not still be contagious. The COVID does not live in your mouth beyond 9 days of illness to transmit to somebody else.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Whalen.
Abby, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Why is there still question now about antibodies and immunity? I mean, this has now been across the world for 7-8 months now in parts of the world. Shouldn't there be enough data to say, okay, well, once you've got this, you're not going to get it again?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. It's still early days. There have been some, if you looked at this from what makes sense and what we know about previous vaccinations, if you have antibodies, you should be immune. But we have seen some, not many, documented cases of people becoming reinfected. The other thing that we know about coronavirus is that immunity may not last for a long period of time. So we don't know whether that immunity that comes from having those antibodies lasts for a couple of months or lasts for a year. So it's very hard to tell people, oh, you have antibodies, you're fine. We don't want to give that information out yet. It's not safe, really, to tell people that.
Speaking of immunity, which comes first in your best guess, herd immunity or a vaccine?
Well, I hope a vaccine. I hope a vaccine. That's what we're really working towards, because we know, herd immunity for coronavirus will mean about 60 to 70% of people will have been exposed and been ill. And what we know from, the cases that we have now, which, looks like about 10% across the country of people may have already had COVID.
Right.
And we've already had 210,000 fatalities.
Yeah.
So, if you start to do the math and look at what that looks like, you're talking about millions of people. So, I think it's really important that we continue the public health strategies that we have discussed since day one and wait cautiously for a vaccine to go through the appropriate channels to be safe, effective, and widely available, which I don't see happening until the spring, at least.
We are joined today by Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen on Vox Pop. The number here is 800-348-2551. And let's grab another call before the next break. Sharon in Saratoga Springs. Sharon, you're up.
Hi, Dr. Whalen. Hi, Ray. Thank you. My question is, I'm a hairstylist, and the environment that I'm working in, I'm finding tremendous pressure to blow dry people's hair. Apparently, a lot of the salons in East Greenbush are doing that, and I'm not comfortable doing it because I'm under the impression that it is dangerous for me, for my clients, and my mom, who I'm a caregiver of. So I was wondering if you could give me any insight on that.
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate your asking that as well. So, interaction with a client, you have to be pretty close as a hairdresser. And, we have issued clear recommendations around mask wearing for both the stylist and for the client. They're not completely foolproof, and we know that as well. So, anything that can kind of increase the airflow towards under your mask can theoretically cause some increased risk. I think that those are individual decisions that can be made by people when they're at work and may be discussed within the framework of a business.
Okay. So if someone was sick in my chair and I was blow drying them and didn't know it, as far as you're concerned, I'm increasing the chance of myself getting infected, or if I was asymptomatic and they were in my chair, I'd be increasing their chances of contracting it. Right.
Well, there's a possibility, depending on which way the air is directed, but that risk also exists just out of the close contact.
In general. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a very upsetting job now.
Sharon.
I'm not comfortable with it.
Well, hang in there, and we appreciate the call. We got to take a break here. Dr. Elizabeth Whalen is our guest today. We have about 20 minutes left on the program. If you'd like to give us a call, 800-348-2551 is the number. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We are lucky to have Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen for another 20 minutes or so on this program. You mentioned learning more and how this is a learning process and fairly early on in that process. And I wondered, you had mentioned the morbidity rate or fatality rate, whatever you call it, in the medical profession. I assume that we have learned better ways to treat this once somebody gets it, and that the death rate is going down as you're learning better treatments.
Well, I think that, you know, the former is true, and the latter we have yet to see. So, you know, we're starting to learn a little bit more about treatment, which, of course, always consists of supportive treatment with things like oxygen, appropriate fluids if people are in need of that. But in terms of the medical therapeutics, we're learning a little bit about how antivirals can impact the disease progression, and how things like steroids can sometimes be used to help an overactive inflammatory response, which can also result in worsening of sickness and sometimes death. So there are certainly, we are developing tools in the armamentarium of being able to treat COVID and understanding more about it every single day. But we still have a ways to go, and there absolutely at this point is no magic bullet for treatment.
As to prevention, my second part of the question about learning more as this pandemic has played out, if there is another wave, as many have said, Fauci and others said, it's quite possible the fall and winter could get ugly. What have you learned in March, April, May, June that you can take into the next wave?
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of important strategies that we need to really continue with. And, you know, I think society is now, you know, adopting what people call the new normal of really being cautious in your interactions with others, making sure that you have that social distancing, making sure that you give a little bit more consideration when you're going out the door to see whether you need to go to some place where you might be encountering other people. We've taken things like, you know, parties and large-scale gatherings and concerts and many other things off the table. So there are many things in place which are decreasing the rate of transmissibility. I think those are important strategies that we have to continue to unfortunately implement as we go into the fall. And I think that what we are also seeing is that we really need to carefully look at where we're starting to see cases pick up and controlling things as soon as we start to see those kind of illness clusters, when we start to see a number of people at a specific area. How do we control that? So that those are really our most important tools at this point.
We are joined today by Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen. A couple of emails here, Doctor, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one hits home for me, as I have some children in the schools, public schools. Eric in Ulster County writes, in schools, students are permitted to take off masks for mask breaks. I'm concerned about this since old classrooms are not well ventilated and schools are putting large number of students in the classrooms. How safe are mask breaks, and how concerned should families be about schools opening, especially with cold weather arriving? And that's from Eric in Ulster County.
So, Eric, that's funny that you, it's not funny, but that was, we were just having this discussion this morning at the health department. Several of the staff were indicating that their children had, had mask breaks at school. And I have a child who's school age as well. Where she goes to school, they do the mask breaks outside 10 feet apart. So I was a little bit less concerned about that, but hearing that they're going on in the classroom, you know, it's difficult, I understand, for kids to wear masks. If kids are well spaced and they have, you know, and they're not doing a lot of moving around, if there's not shouting, you know, there isn't a high risk. But really, from my perspective, I think that wearing masks throughout the school day is the best way to protect the kids.
Would you, well, I guess I could ask you, and I'll tell you about my kids. Some are going to school part-time. So one has opted to stay home. What about your school-age child?
She She's in school.
Yeah.
She's in school in person. Yep, full time.
Yeah, I have one doing the same thing. This one's from Cynthia, and then we'll get back to the phones. Subject heading, it's a long subject. Very confused why my getting a COVID test 72 hours before flying into Massachusetts means I don't have to quarantine for 14 days. I mean, how does that allow for the possibility that I contracted COVID at the airports or on the flight? And that's from Cynthia. A fine question.
It is a fine question, and she's absolutely right. It doesn't. So, you know, I've heard and I've listened with interest about and actually had a call from our own airport to as to whether this makes sense. Does it make sense? And I don't know whether she's got a test at the airport. Is that what you said?
Just tested within 72 hours of flying.
Yeah. So some people are offering testing at airports and saying that you won't have to do a quarantine. But from a public health perspective, a single test is what you get that day. But it doesn't mean, you know, we know the incubation period for COVID is 2 to 14 days.
Right.
So I could theoretically be exposed to COVID on a Saturday, and I could be tested on the following Friday and be negative, and then go to my travel destination and develop symptoms and develop COVID. Because the test wasn't positive. So really, if you are a contact to someone with COVID, or if you are coming from, you know, one of the states that we're concerned has high risk rates of COVID, you need to quarantine for 2 weeks regardless of a test.
All right. And speaking of testing, we've had several people in the newsroom who have had to, they've been at events and what have you, and have had to take tests. They want to know why the Q-tip has to go so far up the nose.
It's not comfortable, is it?
No.
So, you know, what the test that they have received is the nasopharyngeal swab, and it goes really back into, it has to hit the pharynx, which is where the air goes into the back of the throat. So that swab goes in through the nose, and it really does go quite deep and is a lot discomfort for some individuals. There are some other methods of testing with the rapid antigen test that is becoming more widely available, where you can just do a nasal swab, and that is just kind of taking a Q-tip towards the inside of your nose, and you can self-administer some of those. So, you know, we are looking at different availabilities that can suit people's comfort level so that we can enable people to get testing and have more widespread testing. But that PCR test and that nasopharyngeal swab is the gold standard. So, you know, when people have that test, they can be comfortable with their results.
If you had unlimited dollars and a vast budget and infrastructure, would everybody in the country have antibody testing?
Not antibody testing. I would mandate for a lot more rapid testing. Antibody testing, I still think if we have done, not the county health department, but the state health department has done several, you know, random samples of individuals throughout grocery stores at various times a little earlier in the year to determine what the percent positivity was. And you can deduce that from testing a small amount of people around the state in a random type way. We really don't have a lot of people with antibodies. What we need is to be able to deploy rapid testing so that we can identify people that are positive and, you know, place them in isolation so that they don't spread it to others. We really still, although in Albany County we have pretty good availability for testing, we need to have better availability and we need to have more rapid turnaround time for the tests.
We are joined today for the next 10 minutes or so by Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, Albany County Health Commissioner, and several people have been waiting a long time, so let's get back to the phones. Marta in Poughkeepsie, you're up.
Hi, Ray. Thank you, and hello, Doctor. I have, while I was sitting there, you know, the person who screens the call, I told her I wanted to ask about brain fog and how does this virus affect the brain, and also speaking about, like, going over the top. I separate my indoor and outdoor clothing. I wear eye safety glasses or wraparound shades because I don't think much emphasis is being made about protecting your eyes as well as your nose and your mouth. And I also wondered if people have talked about smoking marijuana, which in some states is legal and some is medicinally legal. I've heard that this can help with the lungs. Thank you for let me ask the question.
Sure. Go ahead, doctor.
Thank you. Interesting questions, and I appreciate them. So your first question, remind me, was about the...
about brain fog.
Perfect.
I know multiple organs are attacked.
And that's a good question, because we're seeing that the COVID virus can affect multiple different organ systems in people, and among these includes the central nervous system. And there has been an evolution of literature detailing problems, whether it's something like a cardiomyopathy, which is a problem with the heart, whether there's long-term problems with breathing and energy. And yes, there have been neurologic findings that have been found to be prolonged for individuals. So this is a real thing, and it is something that we are really collecting information on to try to see how that informs people's progress and what we can do about that. So it is also different from influenza, as we talked about at the beginning, in these long-standing potential complications for individuals. And this is just represents an additional concern that we have with COVID. In terms of your infection control for wearing clothes inside and outside and eye protection, eye protection is important from a droplet perspective. If you're social distancing, it's less important, but yes, medical workers, et cetera, usually have been recommended to wear eye protection when they're interacting with people with COVID-19. And your final question about about marijuana, I simply don't know. I did see an article, but it was not in a medical publication about, I'm not sure whether it was CBD or marijuana, but right now I don't think there's enough evidence to support particularly smoking, because we know when you smoke marijuana, you are damaging, your respiratory epithelium and potentially leading yourself to become more vulnerable to contracting COVID-19. And we know that teenagers that vape have a higher risk of complication from COVID. So I would advise against anything that could damage your respiratory tree at this time.
Marta, thanks a lot for the call. Mary Ellen in Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Mary Ellen, you're on with Elizabeth Whalen.
Good afternoon. My husband is objecting to my going to my grandson's soccer game this afternoon.
Oh,
even if I wear a mask, sit 6 feet apart from people, and the soccer players wear masks. What do you think?
Well, so many decisions have to be made on an individual level. And, I understand completely families want to be able to do things like support their loved ones and do the things that we always like to do. I think that I don't know what the setup is, but, I would advise if you wanted to do that and it is outside, I would probably go beyond 6 feet. I would sit 20 feet away from people if you could, and, make sure that you remain masked and maybe not sit close enough to the field where you could come into contact with players should they run off or kick the ball off in your general direction.
Okay.
You know, that's an individual decision. I don't know anything about you or your health conditions, and, you may want to discuss it with your own physician as well.
I suspect your husband wants to stay home and watch the game on TV. But now, this is a point that County Executive Dan McCoy, has talked about with travel teams and, going over county lines to compete. This is a problem, apparently, right?
Yep, it is. It is, and it's not something that we recommend, I mean, people, and we have seen cases that have arisen from situations like this, and we really do our best with trying to make sure that we are compliant with all of the New York Forward guidance and includes sports guidance, and it really just isn't safe for these teams to be traveling all over, and particularly their states travel teams that go to high-risk states. It's not helping our public health situation.
Only a couple of minutes left here, Dr. Whalen. Let's grab a call or two. Jane and Adams. Jane, you're on.
Oh, hi, Dr. and Ray. Thank you very much for taking my call. I do want to ask you all to address, we've spent so much time, I can't count the hours of radio and TV exposure regarding transmissibility, mask wearing, social isolation. Are we ever going to address the things that we can do, all of us, to support our immune systems, to fight against any virus novel or not, any bacterial infection, such as the use of vitamin D3, vitamin C in high levels, and zinc and so forth. Also, to address populations that seem to spread the virus, you're talking about college kids. Now, we know college students do two things. They don't eat very well, and they don't get a lot of sleep. So these are two major factors that allow a person to fight off disease.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing in terms of morbidity and so forth, can we talk a little bit more about the really basic things that anybody can do not be in fear and to bolster their immune?
All right. She only has 1 minute now, so hopefully we can talk about those things.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead.
I think that's a great question, and I'm so happy you brought that up. You know, in terms of how we can prevent ourselves from getting sick, it really is, this is basic public health too, in terms of what is your general health like? Are you managing your conditions like hypertension, diabetes in particular, any asthma? So you have to make sure you're managing whatever you have as best you can. Are you trying to maintain a healthy weight? That's important too. In terms of vitamin supplements, there has been some evolving literature on vitamin D. And vitamin D deficiency is incredibly common among North American people, and particularly people in the Northeast, because we don't get enough sunshine. So a supplement for vitamin D3 can be helpful. Vitamin C and zinc have been proven to be helpful for conditions like the common cold, and can, you know, also help booster a little bit of immune response. And finally, Your nutritional status and your sleep are very important in protecting yourself against not only COVID, but, you know, any viral disease or, you know, any chronic disease. So these are all very important public health messages and health messages in general. And really, you know, I view COVID as an opportunity for people to relook at what their general health is and how they could modify some behaviors if necessary to improve that general health.
Well, Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, we are done. What a beautiful job you did. Thank you so much for taking an hour out for us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And stay healthy, everybody. I appreciate it.
And same to you. Thanks again. Support comes from Bergeron Electrical Services for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas, includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, iMediaConsult.com. And the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting 20 miles of trails for solitary nature walks and online resources for remote learning, AlbanyPineBush.org. Hey, thanks, everybody. Good show today. Thanks to Zach at the controls. Charlene, no, it wasn't. Kayleen White took the calls. Oh, now we're out of time. Stand by for the book show.